Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's a chance that hockey fans might recognize this catchy tune, Shaibu Shaibu, by the Russian pop diva Irina Allegrova. The song is a rallying cry for Russia's national hockey team in advance of the upcoming Winter Olympics in Sochi. And its music video features some of Russia's most famous hockey players. You can check that out at soundcheck.org. But when it comes to what's really happening on the Russian music scene, there's a whole lot more to talk about than an aging pop star singing about hockey pucks. Joining me now from UCLA is Professor David McFadyen, who is the editor of the music site Far From Moscow. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Sochi, where the Olympics are going to be, that is pretty far from Moscow, isn't it?
If you head south, it is. It's down on the Black Sea, and it's probably fair to say that it's the most famous holiday resort in Russia. So plenty of palm trees.
What about a music scene? Do they have one?
The region as a whole does. It's not a very big city. It's only about 300,000 people. So the one music scene it does have is really seasonal. A lot of the big stars from Moscow, when people take their vacation and head south, then the music follows. So a lot of the big stars will play there in the summer. But when it comes to the younger generation, it's pretty much online.
Right. Now, David, you've been writing about this young DJ, Isholm, for a while. Who is she? Tell us a bit about her.
She's a young woman from the south of Russia, young techno producer and DJ, and she represents what is going on in that part of the world. Sochi's not very big, like I said, but it's part of the Krasnodar region, and Krasnodar is a very large southern city, and she's a very good representative of what's going on in terms of web-based music. She's working more and more out of Moscow, but in terms of the way that the web helps young Russian musicians get around the problems of geography, she's a really good example.
Yeah, and we can talk about the specific and very unusual problems that Russian geography presents in just a moment. But here, from her debut album, Confessions, is the artist Isholm. Kentaver. It's from Isholm, a Russian DJ. Her real name is Mirabella Kirianova, and that's from her album Confessions. You can watch a video of Isholm on our website, soundcheck.org. We're looking at Russian music in advance of the Sochi Olympics, which begin on February 7th, with David McFadyen, editor of the music website Far From Moscow and professor of musicology at UCLA. You were talking about geography a moment ago, David. I mean, here in the States, if we talk about, say, an East Coast, West Coast rivalry in hip-hop, we're talking about two groups of people separated by, you know, 3,000 miles, four time zones. In Russia, people in Vladivostok are like, what, 10 time zones away from the folks in Kaliningrad, something like that?
Yeah, generally speaking, if you watch breakfast TV in Moscow, then people on the other side of the country have already finished and gone home.
So, I mean, it's almost literally half a world long, the country. How does that impact the Russian music scene?
Very much so. Physically, you can imagine that it just means that a lot of people will never be able to move from one side of the country to another. They can't consider playing on the other side of the country because it makes no financial sense.
Yeah.
But what that does do, it, on the flip side, it creates an incredibly vibrant online scene, in particular because of piracy, ironically. Russian, according to Russian law, social networks have no legal responsibility for what they host. So Russia's equivalent of Facebook is an incredibly rich location of people swapping audio and video files, both legally and illegally.
We're speaking with David McFadyen, editor of the music site Far From Moscow, about the Russian music scene in advance of the Sochi Olympics. In advance of the Olympics, President Vladimir Putin first banned all public protests. Now he's relaxed that a little bit. He's allowing some with advance approval. And, you know, when we think of protest music in Russia, most of us will think of Pussy Riot, who are actually more of a performing art group than a band, right?
Yeah, there's two reasons to say that they're not a band. One is that, is just exactly as you said, they're part of a performance art group and had been for quite a while before they started making anything resembling music. And the other reason is that some of the women have said publicly that the band doesn't have any members, that anybody's free to perform our tracks, small that they are in number. And the fact that everybody's faces are hidden also allows anybody potentially to put on the same costume and perform in the same role. So it's not a band in the traditional sense at all.
Right. But there are some bands that are making, you know, somewhat politically intended songs. Tell us about this hardcore band called Marta Prell.
They're a good example of what music means online in Russia, in the sense that if we're talking about protest music, everything is dictated by where it happens. Mm-hmm. So if you're operating online, pretty much anything goes. The government has long been of the opinion that no one's really going to pay much attention. So if we're talking about degrees of censorship, they're relatively low online. So you can scream and shout and break things and cause general damage online. If you move into newspapers, the restrictions are greater. And then if you move on to TV, it's a totally different universe.
Is that what got Pussy Riot in trouble, was they moved out of the virtual world and into, like, the real world?
The fact that it caught the attention of national media elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it became less of a web-based phenomenon and a sort of a televisual phenomenon. And that was too many people seeing it in too many places.
Mm-hmm. So Marta Prell, they're keeping a low profile, at least physically?
It's not. I'm sure they would rather have more people listening to what they do, but they're a good example of the fact that if you've reached the opinion that many people are not going to hear you, then that gives you a lot of creative opportunity. But lyrically, you can say pretty much whatever you want to. So it depends on how you look at it. There's a very positive viewpoint in the sense that anything's possible, but it might be a result of people being pretty fatalistic about where they're stuck.
Let's hear this band. They're called Marta Prell, from an album called Versus Songs. This is Death Versus Death. The hardcore band Marta Prell, Death Versus Death, from their album Versus Songs. David McFadyen of the music website Far From Moscow and musicology professor at UCLA with us on Soundcheck, talking about the music scene, or scenes, plural, in Russia. How explicit a political statement can a band like that make online and still not incur the wrath of Putin?
Oh, pretty much anything's possible. All you have to do is just check out some of the social networks and see how many people hang around these bands. And very often it's just friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, and a couple of neighbors. I mean, if we're talking about music on the long tail, to use that well-known economic term, this is the far, far end. So it goes beyond even or below a regional scene. It's very much sort of amateur music in all senses of the word. So I think bands won't encounter any type of problem until they take explicit protest music into a very social venue. So let's say they went to a local hall, they booked a local hall, and maybe some of the guys working in security, but maybe some of the lighting crew, just somebody of a different generation that saw the band and felt it was troublesome, then you can imagine that maybe getting out to the local police and then the band finding it harder and harder to book a venue. Mm-hmm. But if you stay online, pretty much anything goes.
All right, but now once you get into the pop charts, then I think you're probably, well, not that this is specific to Russia. I think you could say this about most places around the world. If you're at the top of the pop charts, it's going to be something that's not going to have a lot of rough edges.
Not at all. Here again, piracy is really important. If even the major artists in Russia, the most mainstream, middle-of-the-road, middle-aged artists, also realize that there's no point selling music because 20 minutes after you start selling it, somebody rips a copy and puts it online. They have to tour as well. So it's generally accepted that all the mainstream artists you see on TV have paid in some way or another to get their face on programs, on the game shows on TV, because that helps them sell concert tickets. So the more frequently their face is seen on TV, the more likely people are to buy a ticket when the posters go up around town for a local show.
So piracy is okay, and so is what in the States would be called payola and plugola, where you pay to get your face on TV.
Yeah, I guess it is. It is a form of sort of visual payola. Yeah, traditional radio has suffered very badly, as you can imagine, if pretty much all music of all styles is available all the time. There's no need to wait for a DJ to play something on a radio station. But TV still plays a very, very important role in terms of keeping the money flowing, both from the biggest artist into TV and then back into the pocket of the artist when they go touring all across the country. Because TV truly is national, that's why.
Right.
TV is the one thing that everybody sees at the same time from one end of the country to another.
So when you look at the Russian pop charts, are they the same as the British and American and French and German pop charts, or are there a lot of actual native Russian acts at the top of the charts?
There's a huge difference. After the end of the Soviet Union through the 90s, there was obviously this knee-jerk rush towards everything Western, but gradually domestic material started to play catch-up, and if you look at the artists who make the most money touring now, or if you look at Russia's iTunes, because iTunes refused to even work in Russia until the beginning of this year, the most popular genre is something called chanson, which is not quite as French as it sounds, but it's a very slow, melancholy, middle-aged type of song that involves a lot of themes such as tricky marriage, prison terms, and other reasons to be generally sort of sad and grumpy. So the most popular style and the most popular names come very much from something that's completely domestic.
And who are some of those names?
There's a threesome that are sometimes referred to as the Holy Trinity. There are three names. There's Lieps is one, and Mikhailov are two guys who sing the style from a male point of view. But there's a woman, Yelena Vayenga, who's the main female representative. So Vayenga, Lieps, and Mikhailov. And in fact, Lieps was just refused a visa to the U.S. because there's an assumption from the viewpoint of the U.S. government that he's involved not only in large amounts of money in the entertainment business, but mafia money as well. So there are some parallels there with, you know, maybe Sinatra from years gone by.
Если друг оказался вдруг и не друг, и не враг, а так. Если сразу не разберешь, плох он или хорош. Парня в горы тяни, рискни, не бросай одного его. Пусть он в связке одной с тобой, там поймешь, кто такой.
So chanson is the name of the style, which...
Right, and there are radio stations dedicated to it. But it's the average chanson listener would be, at the risk of a gross cliche, probably a middle-aged provincial fan. So it's not something that appeals to anybody maybe under 30.
or, you know, urbane city dwellers in Moscow and St. Petersburg?
It would. Unfortunately, it might be the object of some very unpleasant jokes in downtown Moscow.
Okay. David McFadyen with us on Soundcheck talking about music in Russia. His website is farfrommoscow.com. He's also a professor of musicology at UCLA. So back to the pop charts, though, if we look at the top of the pop charts right now, there are names like Lana Del Rey, you know, the American singer. Right. But then there's this Russian singer named Dima Bilan. What's going on here?
His great claim to fame is that he won the Eurovision Song Contest, which, although maybe not that familiar to American listeners, is arguably the greatest showcase for world pop music. It's traditionally a competition in which all the countries of Europe and surrounding nations take part. Each country sends one singer, and they all get one shot to present one song. Mm-hmm. And it produced ABBA, most famously.
But
since then, it's pretty hard to think of another winner of the Eurovision Song Contest who made a lifelong international career out of it. So Bilan is probably the best-known young male pop singer in Russia. And at the moment, he's probably best known because he just finished a season of The Voice, the talent show that we know here in the States, because it was syndicated around the world and had exactly the same format, the same red chairs. And Bilan was one of the four judges. So he's been on TV, you know, a couple of times a week for the whole TV season.
I wonder how much he paid for that.
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Let's hear one of his songs. This is Dima Bilan in a song called Malish.
Где-то с тобою рассветы тебя уносят вместе. Не надо укрою кого-то рядом. Будет, поверь мне, серьезней, чем мы с тобою. Сложно, не верю. Зачем мне все это? Слышь, что мечты? Нам ни к чему, это только ты. Бред, так пишут дети. Что любовь? Будет вновь, я знаю. Улетаем небо под ногами. Удержи руками все, что было с нами.
That is Dima Bilan, big pop star in Russia with his song Malish. And we're speaking about Russian music in advance of the Olympics in Sochi with David McFadyen, editor of the music site Far From Moscow. David, as you get far from Moscow, you run into people who don't maybe look and sound the way most Americans think of Russians looking and sounding. You know, you go south towards the Caucasus Mountains,
right.
You go out into Central Asia. There are all kinds of other ethnicities and cultures and musical traditions at work. Is any of that still in play these days?
It is. Ironically, it's if we refer to it as world music, for example, just in terms of how it's marketed once it gets out of the country, it's one of the styles that actually has been easiest to promote in the West. If we were to ask a geographer, for example, whether Russia's in Europe or Asia, they'd probably say, well, if we're talking about the land, 80% of Russia is actually in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So once you're out of the big cities and you head out towards the Pacific coast, exactly as you said, you get out of a lot of European customs pretty quickly. And if we were just to draw up a list of the artists who've maybe physically played in Europe or further afield with the greatest success, who've been booked most often, it's actually people who represent some of the traditional folk music from those non-European areas. So way out through Siberia and further still to sort of, you know, over northern China and out to the coast.
So we've, you know, here in New York and throughout the States, we've had a chance to hear a lot of the Tuvan throat singers, you know, bands.
Exactly, yeah.
Hunhur Tu and Yatka and Ondar, right. And people like that. Do folks in Russia know who these bands are?
No, that's a good point. I would say that there's a strange sort of dichotomy that The people who maybe are enjoying the greatest festival success away from home are getting no primetime attention back in the places where they live.
And in the area around Sochi, what are the Olympians, what are the athletes likely to hear? Will it just be the kind of pop stuff? Will it be global, international pop? Is there some regional thing that they might, that we, via TV, might be exposed to?
I doubt it very much. I mean, certainly judging on the song with which you began. I mean, there's Allegrova, I think, she's either 60 or 61. She's what the Russians refer to as a people's artist, which is sort of an old Soviet title. It's like a ranking system. So the government's very keen to make Sochi a resort and make Sochi's culture something that's appealing to everybody everywhere. So I don't think they'll be playing it up as a unique cultural location. It'll be a way of branding the whole country.
Well, the 2014 Winter Olympics begin on February 7th in Sochi, Russia, and run through February 23rd. And you can keep up with the musical goings-on in that huge, sprawling country through David McFadyen's website called farfrommoscow.com. He's been on the line with us from UCLA. And David, it's been a lot of fun talking with you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.